Welcome to Disability Empowerment Now, Season 3. I'm your host, Keith Mavidi-Gincini, and today I'm talking with a very good friend of mine, Rio Finnegan, who is a disabled filmmaker. Rio, welcome to the show.
Hey, Keith. How you doing, bud?
Good, good. So we have a very storied history together.
You do.
We first met at the Arizona Theater Company several years ago when I was on the board. Your parents worked there and you were a bartender, I believe.
Yeah, I was a bartender there for when I came back from New Mexico, yes.
And so I'm glad you mentioned New Mexico because we went out for drinks one night, and for some reason you handed me your resume, and I said, holy moly, we had actually gone to the same college / university at very different times. I had just, in fact, just a few episodes ago interviewed my mentor from there, Scott Selden, when I went there. It was called the College of Santa Fe. And
yeah.
When you went there several years ago, up until its closing, it was known as Santa Fe University of Art and Design.
Correct, the Jackalopes.
Yes, when I was there, it was the Prairie Dogs. There in the fall of 09, graduated in 2010 and 10, actually. You came there a few years later. Tell me about that experience.
Oh, man. Okay. So, you know, I think that one of the things when you're in high school, you're like, oh, man, if I'm going to be anybody, you know, as a professional filmmaker, I need to go to college. I need to go to school for it. Now, I learned that I totally didn't. I think the important thing that I really got out of it was meeting, you know, all these connections that, I mean, I work with to this day, you know what I mean? So that was great. But I went to Santa Fe CIFWAD in 2014. Kind of left everything here, got all my gen eds here at the wonderful Pima Community College. And I then went to film school and went there for like 3 years, and on the last year I was there, I was a senior, and it was midterms, and we all got this like letter or this like email from the school saying, basically just laying out, going like, yo, so we're going bankrupt, and you know, we don't have the capability to be open anymore. And here's the thing, we actually can't teach freshman, sophomore, or first semester juniors, just we got to close like now. So that pissed so many people off for great reason.
Sorry to interject. That rightfully so pissed everyone off. And I was reading article after article after article about it in the Santa Fe paper from Tucson. But
because the fire happened.
Well, I don't even know about that, and we'll get to that in a second. But it's interesting because fire aside, what the lads remaining class of the College of Santa Fe went through, and the group of us that banded together, put our differences aside, and we thought we were saving the college and transforming it into a stronger entity, the university, that would, well, not carry on the exact spirit of the college, because the college was founded by the LaSalle brothers, and it was a very different entity, but that you guys would be able to be around for decades to come.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think, you know, y'all were the prairie dogs, right? Y'all hid underground, came back out as a jackalope, and now, I mean, the place is a legend. You know what I mean? So it's like kind of perfect that we were the jackalopes. You know, like it's like that's cool. You know.
So tell me about the fire, because if I've read about that, I've misremembered it.
All right. So to know about the fire, you got to know about the fucked up thing that they did. Was, by the way, I'm sorry. Can I curse?
Do okay. What you want.
Cool. I don't know. I didn't ask. So the fucked up thing that they did was that, so I said that they weren't able to, you know, teach freshmen, sophomore, or first semester juniors. Now, these students, they were like, okay, we're going to go get our transcripts and just take them to another film school like UCLA or whatever. Now, what's fucked up is that Safwad was like, no, you can only transfer your credits to our sister school, which is in which is in New Zealand. So if you want to, if you want to transfer your credits and not start over again, you got to move to New Zealand. So rightfully so, people got pissed. So I remember I was at a bar one night with some buddies, and I get a call from my mom, and she's like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally fine. I'm just at a bar. And she's like, oh, thank God. She got a call because like an automated emergency call. And the robot was like, hello, we are reaching out because of an emergency caused by a fire. And she was like, what's going on? So she called me up and I called my roommate. And I'm like, what's up? What's going down? So what happened was, is that these kids, you know, they just started looting, going in, throwing chairs through teachers' windows. They burned down a whole film set. A whole film set. That was, they were filming the show Manhattan on. Crazy. So, that's part of the legend of that place.
So, before we go any further, take me back to the first few days, really your entire experience there, because I want to know about the accessibility angle of the university and of New Mexico in general. When I was there, I mean, we've talked about this several times. I have cerebral palsy, my bones freeze in the winter. But beyond that, I can get around basically without.
Yeah.
People have no idea I'm disabled unless it comes out of my mouth, which it does all the time.
Yeah, but, you talked about this.
Not to put you on the spot, but also to put you politely
spot.
Talk about not only the accessibility of the environment, of the physical environment, but the social environment as well, with your colleagues, your friends.
Right. Okay. So there's layers, I think, to this question. Because
I'm hoping so.
Yeah. Basically, I'm just breaking this down to answer your question. I'm going to break it down into three categories, right? You got the school, right? And its accessibility. Honestly, that was easy. Easy, like, you know, they were pretty good at that, you know. They were very communicative with me on anything I needed, you know, blah, blah, blah. The place I lived in was pretty ADA friendly, at least for me. So that was cool. Socially, you know, like, I've always been this guy, Keith, you know me, I'm able to really comfortably fit into both the disabled community and abled community just by, you know, chatting it up, by, you know, and mostly people treat me, I don't know, like anybody else, but it's interesting, you know, people are fascinating with how they deal with people in a chair. I mean, my good friends, they just, since day one, they were always just like, yep, here we go, and see me as that. But sometimes people get scared to like ask me questions, you know? They'll, you know, maybe, you know, come at it with a little humor, which I love. I love. Usually it's not malicious or anything. And sometimes I'm like, oh, what? That was an offside joke, but like, it doesn't really offend me. It's more like I'm trying to teach them, you know? So yeah, that was easy. I mean, there was one gig I worked on as an assistant director, and the director, now this is a whole story in itself. I'm not going to go into the whole long story, but the director wanted to do this scene on the roof, on this roof of the college, and so they got me a like push wheelchair, carried that up. I got on this strong burly the back of this strong burly grip, and he just carried me up, you know, and then plopped me down, and I just kind of moved people around by, I got a loud voice, you know, I command attention. So yeah.
Teach me, oh wise one, teach me everything you know. Continue on.
No, man. I mean, on that subject, like, I'm loud, but it's not, I'm working on it all the time, man. There is no time where I'm not working on that, because it's like I have to. I feel sometimes like I have to work, you know, be that, you know, command that attention, because damn it, I want to be seen. You know what I mean? Or understood, you know? Because I feel like, true invisibility is when, it's when you're not understood. Like, if you were invisible, whatever. But I think real invisibility is not being understood. It's being seen as something else. You know what I mean? And I get that all the time. People see me as one thing when actually I'm that strange third thing. You know what I mean? And, you know, my life is just about trying to be understood. You know, that's why I'm, you know, a writer. That's why, you know, I make films. It's just so, you know, people can see me.
So what, first of all, I want to get to the impact, which I'm sure we could spend several episodes on, the impact of everything your parents distilled into you about your self-esteem, self-confidence, perseverance, empowerment, and the like, but also what attracted you to Santa Fe and becoming a writer and a filmmaker out of everything you could possibly get your degree in? What ignited those specific passions? Because when I think of real Finnegan, I think of those patches.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's kind of, well, it started out, you know, like when I was 13, you know, I'd write all these little novels, you know, and poetry. But like, I would get like 3 chapters into a novel I'm writing and just hate it, because like, what I realized is that I was, you know, it just wasn't coming out as I wanted it to. And then I found this book by Sid Fields called The Screenplay. And I read it and just kind of broke it down and realized that I was writing the wrong things. I was writing a movie when I should, you know, when I was trying to do novel, you know. But so I realized that film was more my, you know, my thing. And I started writing as soon as possible once I realized that. I wrote a 345 page movie that still didn't really have an ending. And they say every page is a minute, so 345 minutes. that's a long, long ass movie that still didn't have an ending. But it was good. I'm proud of it. You know what I mean? I don't know even where it went, but maybe my mom has it hidden away. I don't know. So then I started writing and I watched the movie Darjeeling Limited, you know, by Wes Anderson. And then I was like, oh man, all the shots and the storytelling. I was like, oh, I want to direct as well. I want to, you know, really make sure the shots are where I want it to be. So yeah, you know, and then when I was 18, I have a friend who is a producer. He like produced Face Off and Dick Tracy. And he was like, oh, for my birthday, he gave me a free pass to Sundance and kind of having me be like a creative, what do they call it, creative associate or some BS word. But basically my job was to watch these films at Sundance and just report back to him, you know.
That sounds like a horrible, horrible job.
Oh yeah,
fully sarcastic.
Oh, I know. I was so, ugh, poor me. Anyways, I met. I was at a party, you know, with all the directors there. Fucking kid in a candy store, just like.
I bet.
I ran over the tip of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's toe. That was fun. He was like, oh man, can I buy you a drink? I'm so sorry. And I'm like, sure. And I'm like 18, you know. But his producer was like, no, we got like 5 dinners to go to tonight. You can't buy this guy a drink. And I'm like, oh, okay. Bye, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And anyways, I was at this party and this director who I knew about his movies. He did like Smoke Signals and Powwow Highway, like indigenous films out of New Mexico. And I've watched them as a kid, so I was like, I was pretty versed on his films. And I struck up a conversation with him and he was like, oh man, you're really cool. I'm the dean of this college, you know. He's Chris Ayer, by the way, you know, that's his name. And he was like, I'm the dean of this college, and I think that, you know, like, I mean, Robert Redford kind of has this scholarship through the college, and I think he'd be a really good, you know, person to kind of go with that. And so I did. I put together a little film on just myself. And yeah, and they accepted it. They were like, hell yeah, dude, let's go. And so I got to meet Robert Redford. That was cool. That was cool. And got a scholarship through that school. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. The school for me, man, it was like, that was the easiest part of New Mexico, was that school. You know what I mean? That school helped me out a lot, even though, you know, even when they were crashing to the ground, man, like, they didn't hurt me. Like, I had to stay over the summer, though, to get my last credit, work on this, like, worked on this terrible zombie film. Oh, it was so great. It's so awful.
You told me about that. You told me a lot of teasers for this episode before.
Yeah, it's a wild one.
When I went there several years before, my official major was in the creative writing program. But I also did a heavy minor in music in the CMP program, contemporary music program. And the only reason why I didn't double major is that I cannot read or write music myself. So that's how I spent most of my time pinballing it between my two areas of interest. And women, let's be real here. Yeah,
that's a giant interest.
Shocker, I was the only one, but no, heaven help. But anyway, so the film program, when I was there, and it continued up until the university shutting down, was, and rightfully so, nationally known. There were incalculable amount of movies.
Macklemore went there.
Yeah. And so talk about being steeped in that program, the rich history, because I only got to see it from the outside looking in. I was conscripted for a few student films. I think we did a few music videos, my band and I, when I was there. But beyond that, the film program and the actors program were like the creme de la creme of the academic prestige there. Talk about those programs.
Right. Also, tangent. Now, I'm not going into it, but you'll remember Macklemore. What the heck happened to that guy, man? Like, he's like woke Eminem for like maybe 2 weeks, and then he just drops off the face of the world. Okay. Anyways, so when I went to Santa Fe, you know, there was a lot of interest Okay. You got to remind me like what the real question was. I was.
So I just basically filled in the listener about what I'd studied
Yeah, studied.
years prior and how I really divided my time between the two programs
Right.
that I was heavily involved in. And those were great programs. But if you were involved with the college or the university, the creme de la creme
Yeah.
of the academic pursuits, there was the film program and
Film, yeah.
was the theater program.
Yeah.
And you were involved more heavily with the film program, but I'm assuming that there was a lot of overlap between the two to talk.
Theater, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, I hear you.
Yeah.
So, I think that for me, theater, I had a friend, or my mom, one of my mom's friends was also a teacher in the theater department. And, you know, when I first started there, I was like, I'd pop in, say hey to her. You know, but theater for me has always kind of just been a like I know how the sausage is made, so I'm comfortable just being around like seamstresses or seam and seam people, you know, like costume people, you know what I mean, in theater, because my mom was a costume designer. And but theater, honestly, never really was like a passion necessarily. It was more just something that when I was growing up, it would be a really cool place to see interesting storytelling. And I learned a lot from it, because, you know, there's a really good quote by someone, I don't even remember who, but it goes, books are the way, you know, when we write a book, we study the way people think. When you write a play, you're studying the way people talk, speak. And when you write a movie, it's all about how what people see, you know what I mean? So, you know, if you look at theater in that kind of lens, it makes it very interesting, because then you go like, oh well, like are you know, is the dialogue interesting enough, you know what I mean, or what needs work here, you know? Anyways, so yeah, in Santa Fe, I didn't really kind of go between. It was more film, because, you know, that had my main attention. It kept me really busy.
Yeah, so why I mentioned theater is not only that's how we met several years later, but I was conscripted by several of the film students to be in their short films, and I wasn't a actor than by any means. But every film student on every project requires people. And so I just assumed that there was natural synergy between the departments. certainly when you went there at the university, although I never saw any promotional material for the university, I cannot fathom that they wouldn't hype up the already legendary film major that
yeah,
they
were,
have.
I'll be honest, man, we were kind of the jocks, you know. we were the quarterbacks of that place, which I really hate saying, but you know, like theater and
No,
film.
say more because I'm not getting the reference.
Oh, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that we were.
I'm not really into sports, so,
Oh,
but
me,
if
I don't know either. I'm just talking about in like a movie, right? You got your jocks and your I don't know, just normal kids or whatever. But the thing is like we were, you know, everyone knew us for being the film guys, you know what I mean? When you think of SWAD, I'll be honest with you, you mainly think of the film department, you know what I mean? There was a lot there, but you know, all the money went into the film department, you know what I mean? So unfortunately the theater department and the film department did not talk to each other, which I was always like, no, we should kind of, I mean, I would reach out to prop masters from the theater department, you know what I mean? But I tried, but like they didn't want to mess with us, and I didn't understand why.
Mind is blown. Let's talk about your look, because it's very bohemian, very confident. I always comment on your mustache. How much of that look evolved over your period at being at a very swanky art school?
So when I was young, I always wanted a mustache, a beard. I wanted, you know, like facial hair of some kind. And my facial hair didn't really come in until I was like 21. And even then it was a little, just only a little bit, you know? I have like Romani, Czech blood, and you know, we just don't grow as much hair on our face as, you know, like my dad, who, you know, his family comes from Ireland, and you know, those guys are thick and bushy. So like 21, 22, I was able to kind of grow a mustache. And then I was realizing that the way my hair grows, it just like poofs out. Like I was having two little tiny squirrel's tails that just wasn't like resting on my face or just doing anything. And it was getting unruly. So I kind of just decided, oh, I'll put like mustache wax on it and kind of make sure it doesn't get in my face and my mouth. So really it was out of necessity, and then I wanted a mustache, you know what I mean? So and now I'm able to like grow, have the mustache, have kind of a good thick goatee, but that's about it, man. You know,
But I fit in pretty well, you know, at that school. So
you mentioned that you're still in touch and collaborate with a lot of the people you met there. Did that always come natural, particularly with the way the situation ended? Did that create a lot of camaraderie on top of already a collaborative environment with your fellow students?
Yeah. I was very picky with my friend group.
You picky?
I know. Well, hear me out, man. Like when I went there, I mean, I was like, story is king. You know what I mean? Like, everybody likes what they like. You know what I mean? Whatever. But the atmosphere over there, again, it lends itself to the jock energy that I'm talking about. But there was just an ad nauseum amount of film bros. And if you ever know what a film bro is, like, it's someone you'd meet in especially, I'll use these people as my classmates as an example, but like freshmen would come in or sophomore would come in and they'd be like, without fail, they'd always go, "Hey, what's up? I'm Tanner. I want to be a director, and my favorite director is Quentin Tarantino. I get everyone. Hey, I'm Skyler. What up? I want to be a director. Favorite director, Quentin Tarantino." And I was like, dude, there's other directors out there, man. He's like, "No, I want to be exactly like Tarantino." He just knew how to like shake it up. And I'm like, there so many directors do that. Like, Tarantino is great, but he's not like God, you know? And I was very I chose the ones that were more interested in making an interesting story. You know what I mean? And those were my collaborators. So, like, my roommate, my favorite roommate, Jose An from Mexico City, me and him just hit it off. You know, he liked mythology. That's kind of how I, you know, started liking storytelling, was through mythology, Greek, Hindu, you know, all those stories. You know, they interested me and they interested him too. So, you know, I was like, cool, yeah, we're going to be friends. And he was, he was a cinematographer, which means that he had his own camera, you know? And, you know, for me, doing film, I had to kind of figure out what I was good at and what I was bad at. You know what I mean? And just be okay with that. So, like, I would take every job that was possible, like job title, just so I could figure out if I was going to be good at it. And, like a cinematographer is tough because you got to really have two hands. You got to kind of climb trees sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't do that. So I found that my best skills were more people, you know, dealing with people and talking with people and communicating my vision or communicating what needs to be done, assistant directing, producing, you know, kicking ass and taking names. And I was good at that. So, and he had a camera, So I'm like, yeah, let's put those together. 2 + 2 = fuck yeah, you know? And yeah, it's great.
So you mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the end, or the beginning of the end of the university and the fire and all of the chaos. How would you like going through all of that, not only as a student, but as someone who was going to be a part of one of, if not the last graduating class of the University of Art and Design? And how did that make you feel in terms of getting job prospects in your industry? Were you concerned that the bridge you had just gotten your degree from was, for all intensive purposes, had gone belly up? And so were you concerned at all?
You know, no, I wasn't, because by the end of that, I realized that a diploma in the film industry means jack all. You know what I mean? Really what it is about money and who you know, right? So it's like, again, I didn't need to go to film school, but I'm glad I did, because I met all these collaborators and kind of figured out what I was going to do in the industry. You know what I mean? So here's the thing, Keith, is like, Safwad and their fuck ups towards the end, that was not the monster that I was dealing with. You know what I mean? That was like easy, whatever. The monster was the horrendous health care system in New Mexico. Absolutely. I tell everybody who is disabled, I'm like, hey, if you want to live there, don't do it. Don't do it. That place is death. And I mean that totally. They're just fumbling the ball left and right. I thought Arizona was bad. It's so much easier than in Santa Fe. So New Mexico pumps all their money into infrastructure and tourism, because that's why, you know, you talk to someone and they'll be like, oh my God, I love New Mexico, right? They don't know the sausage. They don't know how the sausage is made. They just know that, oh, it's like, oh, it's cute, you know, they got, yeah, like it's, yeah. They don't know the seedy, gross stuff that is going on in there. So, it made it unlivable for me. That's how bad it was. Honestly, the vets have it worse than I did. It was, oh God. So I was dealing with that for 3 years, just people not, you know, like they had no money to pay anybody, you know, that really cared. And when they did pay the people, the healthcare people that were working for them, they paid them like pennies, dude. So of course you're not gonna care. Of course you're gonna hate your job, you know, and treat everybody like shit, you know. So yeah, man, if you're disabled, never live in New Mexico. Don't do it. Go through it. Don't live there.
So you mentioned at the beginning the university is now a legend because of how it disintegrated and evaporated not even 10 years after it was created out of the ashes of a college that had been there for decades.
Yeah.
Looking back on it now, and this is several years removed from the absolute debacle that was the university closure, which unfortunately was also predicted by the way the college before it closed, unfortunately. What do you think the legacy of the institution is now?
Honestly, man, it's the legacy. I mean, they ended on a sour note, dude. Like, you know, nobody from that college. I mean, the dean of students was doing his best. Chris Ayer left like halfway through my term there, and and a new person came in, and I think he left because he knew that people were embezzling. And that was the whole problem. Embezzlement. And so, you know, with the embezzlement, with the not allowing people to get their transcripts, like, that stuff really, yeah, it left a very sour note. So, you know, they burned it to the ground. And that was the legend. I think the legends, unfortunately, wasn't the administrators. It wasn't the college itself. The legend was the people that came out of that, you know? And the story that came out of it.
So if there are any aspiring filmmakers or self-advocates with disabilities who are listening to this episode or watching it and wanting some tips on how to begin their professional journey, what are some tips that you would give them?
Well, if you're specifically, I think I would want to, you know, give tips to other disabled filmmakers, because that's all I know. You know, really, I think that knowing what you're good at and what you're bad at is a very important thing to explore, right? And it's humbling too. I know, because because every time you know you're bad at something, it doesn't feel great, you know, but then that just means, you know, when you find something you're good at, just absorb that and be the best you can on that, you know? And, you know, it helps you kind of figure out, navigate the situation on who you are. Second thing,
you're going in film, like, don't become a director first. Don't do it. Just don't do it. Become an assistant director first. Because an assistant director, you are basically, you're the babysitter of a creative mind that is panicking. And he's trying to figure out what to do and how to, he's got so many things. They got so much, just, it could be a woman too. You know, they got so many things going through their mind, you know, and your job is to kind of go like, hey, buddy, it's all good. We got 15, but we got 15 minutes on this set. So like, we gotta get going now. So let's get that take and let's get out. And doing that, you learn what to do as a director, how to lead, and what not to do as a director. So I always tell people, like, when you're first going into film, everyone says, I want to be a director. No, you don't. You're gonna crash and burn. And that's a way to learn too. Crashing and burning, learning from those burns. But no, or you could sit back, babysit the ones that are fucking up, and then you learn from that, you know? So that's my second part of the lesson, or my yeah.
So I would like to thank that both listeners who have disabilities and listeners who have yet to discover or embrace their own disabilities listen and watch this podcast and now video cats. And it would be naive to think that they both take away the same things from the episode. So as my guests, what do you hope that listeners with disabilities take away from this episode? And what do you hope that listeners who have yet to discover their own disabilities take away from this episode?
I would say if you heard anything of what I was, I guess, what we're talking about is, I think, one, don't live in New Mexico. Don't do it. You're better than that. Okay? It's called the land of entrapment for a reason. Eats you up. Secondly, I don't know. I want people to take away the fact that, you know, figuring out your disability, I think, is incredibly, I mean, it's an identity, right? So how does one do that? How does one explore that identity, right? For me, it was my look, you know, like, you know, how I kind of expressed myself, how I found some place where, you know, something to do with my body that felt good. It felt right to look in the mirror, you know. I mean, hey, I'm always working. I was still looking in the mirror and go like, fuck yeah. But, you know, that's a constant that we're all working on, right? But, you know, in this search, in this quest to find that disabled identity, try everything out. Try it all out. And I mean that in like a giant sense. You know what I mean? Not even just in film, but know what you're good at and what you're bad at. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to play guitar. Couldn't play guitar. Learned that quickly. But instead, I pivoted and found that I was good at harmonica, and I was a decent singer, so played in a band, did that. I wanted to surf. We figured out a way that I could do surfing. You know, it was different, but sometimes it will be different. No one's journey is going to be the same. So try it all out and see what sticks. And know that trying out that stuff is part of trying to figure out who we are as a person. After a while, the whole disabled identity kind of just becomes less of a disabled identity and more of a you identity. You know? Yeah.
And what do you hope that listeners who have yet to embrace their own disability take away from this episode?
I don't know. I feel like that's what I'm saying is, you know, like if you don't, like if you're still working on trying to find that identity, you know, just try everything out. That feels right, you know?
Note to recorder, please scrub that last section. I asked it twice. We'll figure it out. Post. Hold on. Just give us a few seconds to... So, Rio, before we close, I want to end not as the university or college did, but what are some of your favorite memories besides the collaborators that you got to meet about that time? Because even with the chaos of the environment, it sounded like you had a blast there. And so what are some of your most cherished memories looking back at that time?
Man. Honestly, all the memorable stories were kind of fuck ups of mine, and I love it, you know, like, I had a blast for sure, you know, like hanging out with all these awesome collaborators, but you know, like, you know, going on a date and having that date go weird, and then riding home in the snow while my chair is dying in the snow, and the date rides by me and is like, "Do you need help?" And I'm like, I have to like concede and just go, "Yeah, I need you to go to my apartment, get my car, pick me up, blah, blah, blah." She was pretty plastered too, so that made it interesting. But yeah, you know, those stories, man, the stories of like self-discovery, the stories of I don't know, not knowing what to do and then figuring it out.
Well, real, I thank you very much for coming on this episode and talking about everything. And it wasn't all negative experiences. It was just a chaotic
Right.
time, but you learned from it, and I'm so glad that
Yeah.
at least the structural environment
Right.
of the campus was accessible, because shockingly not a lot are.
I know. I know.
Yeah, and so thank you so much. I know we've been trying to do this episode for a while now.
I know, dude.
I hope you will come back and
Yeah.
share some more wisdom, because we're both Irish. We love to have fun, and we love to swap stories.
Oh yeah.
And
Oh yeah.
but you come from a very different school of thought in the way you've studied, the way you've lived your life, academically, opening up a whole new avenue and outlook of a place that unfortunately I didn't get to experience, and that's neither good nor bad, but you got to experience a much different environment than I did. And so I'm grateful to hear about the twists and turns, the ups and even the downs of the experience, because that's what creativity is. That's what living with full authenticity is.
Yep.
For hell or high water, that's what it is. And so thank you for all the truth you've dropped on this episode, and it is an
Anytime,
honor
man.
to know you, my friend.
Oh, likewise.
You have been listening to Disability Empowerment Now. I would like to thank my guest, you, our listener, and the Disability Empowerment team that made this episode possible. More information about the podcast can be found at DisabilityEmpowermentNow.com or on social media at Disability Empowerment Now. The podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts or on the official website. Don't forget to rate, comment, subscribe, and share the podcast. This episode of Disability Empowerment Now is copyrighted 2023.